All right, we're in Windows 7 world again. How are you doing?
Doing fine. How are you, Charles?
Good. So last time we talked to you, introduce yourself for a minute.
Hi, I'm Bhaskar Sridharan. I'm a senior development lead in the Windows Reliability, Security, and Privacy team.
Yes.
The new name after the big
change.
Yeah.
Well, changes happen after every big release,
yeah,
right?
We do. And so the thing that we'll be talking about today is the work that we have done over the last two releases in Vista and Windows 7 on making Windows recoverable from failures that happen either localized because of a localized cause or because of degradation over time.
Yeah.
Right? So people complain normally that, hey, you know, Windows used to work well when I purchased it and stuff, and now over a period of time I've been installing some stuff, software here and there, and working on it, and things have degraded over a period of time. So the problem that we look at are two specific things in terms of long-term degradation. One is when there is a degradation that's localized to the system, mm-hmm. which causes the system not to boot up, right? So if the user cannot even boot up the system,
mm-hmm.
then that's a serious problem. So how can we do any localized analysis and diagnosis of the system and do localized repairs so that we can get the machine booting back again?
Mm-hmm.
That's one angle. The other angle is, you know, the user is having lots of miscellaneous things around the whole system that are not necessarily localized, in the sense that these are not necessarily causing boot problems per se, but they are causing lots of other problems, and the user might have tried some of the diagnostic stuff that we built in Windows 7,
mm-hmm.
Ragu Steam, for example, that you spoke to earlier.
Yeah.
And after that, they're saying, yeah, I tried these things, but still I'm not able to really get my system to work. So can I actually move my entire system back in time, but retain the data? You don't want to move the data back in time and lose it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is, can I move the entire system back in time and still retain the data here? So these are the two technologies that we will talk about today.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to introduce the team here.
Sure.
So you know what the roles are. This is Stefan Dahl.
Yeah.
He's a developer in the team.
And I've been working on, last time we talked about radar displays.
Yes, radar.
We are talking about the Windows recovery environment and the recovery technologies built into Windows 7.
And we have Pawan here.
I'm Pawan. I worked on Windows recovery environment and a little bit on recoverability in Vista and Windows 7.
Excellent.
And we have Desmond Lee.
Hi, I'm Desmond Lee. I'm a program manager in the Windows Reliability, Security, and Privacy team.
Excellent.
Been working in the recovery space for the last 5 years or so, both in Windows Vista and Windows 7.
Excellent, man. So let's talk about this. I mean, radar, when we talked about radar, was all about, you know, understanding when memory leaks happen sort of automatically. So, but one of the things in Windows is that, you know, and you didn't fix this in Windows 7, right, is that over time, chances are it might slow down because you install a bunch of stuff, a bunch of services, a bunch of gook, a bunch of stuff in the registry, blah, blah, blah. We're not talking about that, per se. We haven't solved that problem yet, right? But you're
right
on the road.
So we have not solved that problem. So what we have, so again, there are two issues to do, right? So one is, we have not really solved the problem in Windows 7. What we have really done is, we have just provided a way for the user to take the machine back in time to a backup that he might have had.
Yes.
So we have not really solved the problem of, you know, of preventing the actual degradation from happening over time. We certainly have not done that in Windows 7. But what we did was to actually make the technology for helping the user to take the system back in time,
mm-hmm.
in a pretty effortless way,
mm-hmm.
while preserving the data.
Sure.
That's essentially what we built. But there's another aspect to it too, which is the aspect of actually, you know, diagnosing local failures that might happen as a result of degradation,
mm-hmm.
which prevent the machine from being booted. So for example, system files, right, being corrupted, for example,
mm-hmm.
right? So we also have other kinds of issues that you could actually fix with certain types of localized fix, such as system restore. So
okay.
We could use technology like system restore to do a localized fix,
mm-hmm.
that may not necessarily affect the entire system, but parts of the system that are critical for the actual boot environment.
Okay.
So those are the things that we did work on for Windows 7. So let's talk
about that.
Yep.
Okay, so talking about boot failures. Basically, what happens is when the operating system boots up, it goes to certain checkpoints. Am I still booting? Am I still booting? If at some point the system can't finish booting, let's say a device driver is missing, or a registry setting necessary for a reboot is in invalid state because maybe the user installed an update or the user installed a device driver for their video camera or something like this, the system might fail to boot. But the user without our recovery technology used to see you as a blue screen with an inaccessible boot device or something like this. And then the system is not usable anymore, and normally the user has to call technical support or so because there's really no way to getting back to a bootable system. What will now happen in Windows 7 is that the system automatically fails over into a separate boot environment, which is completely independent from the main Windows installation. And that separate boot environment, we run a bunch of diagnosis tools, completely automated. Automatic user doesn't need to put give any input. We test integrity of the file system. We check the file system for corrupted data structures. And then we go to a bunch of consistency checks, seeing are all the boot critical files are there, are all the device drivers in the correct version. And then if you find any of these failures, we repair them on the fly and boot back into the start the boot process again. And if you're the user not sitting at your desk while maybe you're going turning the machine on and going to the kitchen to get coffee, by the time you come back, you might already have a repaired system. If the machine failed in between to boot, we repair it and spec. So if you wait long enough, you might not even see the failure.
That's excellent. So essentially, again, what you're saying is you will always be able to boot, which is is definitely an advancement from Vista.
Correct,
that
yes.
wasn't the case there.
Yes. In Vista, we actually had this hardware in the system,
mm-hmm.
but in Vista, we required computer manufacturers to deploy our solution as part of their installation process. So if you were a customer and you bought a machine from a big computer manufacturer, there was a pretty good chance to get our repair tools, our recovery environment. But if you got a retail copy of Windows Vista, or you bought it from a small system builder, you did not get our technology. Excellent. Now in Windows 7, it's built in. You get it all the time.
Very cool. I mean, I think it's really important that people understand. There may be people out there going, well, I mean, how hard is it to boot an OS, right? But in some sense, we support, 80,000, 100,000, basically, drivers?
Correct. And we allow every third-party hardware or software vendor to put their files basically into the boot process. And if anything goes wrong, or that you install a software which has never been tested with Windows 7 because it was only tested with XP, mm-hmm. but you install it anyway because how should you know better,
mm-hmm.
That might fail to boot.
Mm-hmm.
And in the old system, you might be dead.
Yep.
Basically, you can't boot the machine. With the Windows recovery environment, we come in and roll the system back to just the state before the installation, and you're bootable again.
Excellent. So let's take us through some of the engineering here, right? I mean, you're a dev on this.
I'm on the test.
It doesn't matter. You're still a developer. So you have to, test these days just means software design engineer who gets to try to break code and try to figure out the system and sometimes also help developers fix their bugs. So what kind of, talk to me about a little bit.
Okay, so Stefan talked to us about what happens when we see a boot failure. So what we do is we essentially test the end-to-end scenario. Our tests start at, they traverse through the boot process,
mm-hmm.
and at the end we know that what our code would fix. For example, if you had a corruption in NTDLN, for example, what happens is we create that corruption mm-hmm. to start with. That's how our tests start. Then we reboot the machine.
Mm-hmm.
So the machine goes through the normal boot cycle. At a certain point, the machine bug checks. And then after that, we automatically boot into Windows recovery environment, and then we fix the system, right? So that's how the end-to-end scenario works. So within our tests, what we do is we create this corruption, and we go through the whole process. And at the end, we make sure that the system comes back up, and then it is running fine at that point. And then we also check that we fix the right root cause. It's not that our test did not corrupt the system enough. Mm-hmm. So we come back up and then we say the system is all fine.
Mm-hmm.
We will flag such kind of situations. And there could be some cases where we did not corrupt the system enough so that the system can still boot. So we flag our tests. catch all such issues. So we essentially depend on the end-to-end scenarios. So that's how we
test. Cool. Speaking of scenarios, we have the PM right here.
Yep.
That's what you do, man. You're a scenario man.
Yep. So
take us through some of these.
So I think Stefan already talked about the boot repair scenario. So I'm going to talk about the rollback scenario. As Bhaskar mentioned earlier, there are some systems that do degrade over time despite our efforts to prevent problems from happening.
Sure.
So in Windows 7, one of the things that we introduced is an easier-to-use interface to help you guide users through the process of rolling back the system. Mm-hmm. In previous versions of the operating systems, XP, and in some cases for Vista, when the user wants to reinstall their systems, they have to go find their installation disk. More often than not, they simply don't have access to it. It might
sure.
be somewhere in the shelf. So in Windows 7, users can get to an interface through the control panel, and which actually, more specifically, through the Action Center, the little flag on the bottom right of this, of all the Windows 7 systems. Mm-hmm. And through there, they can get to an interface where users are offered the different types of restores or rollback technologies that are available on a system. They can try system restore, or they can try rolling back the system using a backup that they have created, or rolling back the system to the state that they got when they first opened the box, or using an installation file, OS installation file. We partnered with a lot of the computer manufacturers to preload their recovery images on boxes that they ship to make this experience not just easy for the user to use, but mm-hmm. allow manufacturers a way to differentiate themselves from other manufacturers.
So let me ask a question in the sense, in the kind of the whole, a lot of what you guys do is automation. So when, let's assume that my system over time, and again, this is because I've installed a bunch of software, I've installed a bunch of plugins in IE and Firefox and Chrome or whatever I'm using, I just put a bunch of stuff on my system, and over time, things get corrupt, things start slowing down, whatever really happens, it happens. Why can't the operating system say, hey, I can't boot, I know why, or whatever, or this, I'm going to restore the system back to an earlier state automatically. And because you don't ruin my data, what the user might see is, you know, hey, I just restored you back automatically, you're probably going to notice some of the things you installed, you know, that probably caused the problem aren't there anymore, just thought I'd let you know, as opposed to having me to manually do it. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
It makes sense. The problem is actually the boot, a failure to boot is a pretty clear-cut case. We know you want to boot and you can't boot. So we know there's something to repair.
Yes.
For a lot of other scenarios, it's actually very hard for the operating system to tell that things are really that bad. Mm. If you get a slight degradation of performance over time, the operating system can't really say, hey, this is bad versus this is good. We might be measuring, seeing that certain operations take longer than they used to take, mm-hmm. but the user might actually want this. If the user installs a certain plugin, which is just slow performing, we can't go ahead and decide, instead of the user, hey, this is bad, let's remove that plugin.
Understood. Well, I guess what I was trying to get at was that in most scenarios, like, you know, and I've done this before on Vista, on Windows. Actually, to be honest with you, I haven't done it on Windows 7 yet. I will be perfectly honest, because I haven't needed to. But essentially, I'm talking about the really gregarious problems where, as a user, you're like, wow, something is really, really wrong here. You know, and I know that we do have performance metrics inside of in Windows where it measures the time I click something to the time something actually happens. Let's assume it ends up being 30 seconds. The operating system should know, wait a minute, stop. Put up some kind of thing and be, hey, man, clearly something's wrong with the system. I'm just talking about as we move into the future, whatnot. You guys are trying. I mean, this is the beginning of like really homeostatic
right.
systems.
So this kind of an automatic diagnosis and being able to judge the user's intent and the user's expectation of what their performance and delivered expectation from the machine is. So this has been a constant threat going around for several releases that we have been trying to address. But the problem that you mentioned, which is, you know, that the user finds the amount of time that it takes for an application to launch, for example, is way more than his expectation. Today, the problem that we have is there's no real clear way to catch this. For example, there are some users who, so if they're bringing up a big application, for example, mm-hmm. a database application that they're actually running on the client system, mm-hmm. they would not mind waiting for that application to actually come up after 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. So for us to know which application is important to the user that he's willing to pay the price of waiting versus which ones are not really that important that he's not willing to pay the price mm-hmm. is actually a technologically challenge
sure.
that we need to figure out. So understanding the user's intent and how their cost matrix is actually divided is not an easy thing to do. So for example, there are times when I would live with some application, say Outlook, for example, mm-hmm. i.e. taking 2 minutes to come up. But certain situations, I just cannot afford to wait certain applications because I know that this application doesn't have to do anything big.
Yeah.
Right? So being able to figure out what the cost matrix is and how the user is actually, where the user is actually putting his emphasis on is not an easy thing to figure out automatically. Certainly. So this has been an issue with us, and because of this, we have actually had to take the user's help in cases where we are unable to figure this out. So for example, the case where Stefan mentioned where you know, it's very clear cut that the machine cannot boot, right? There's no two ways about it. Mm-hmm. Especially some of the detection that we do there, there's no two ways about it. We know the machine is not booted, right? So when we go back and when we start diagnosing and when we look at the list of things that are there on the things that we know we can automatically fix, and let's say we don't find any of those problems, mm-hmm. at that point, we are now left with asking the user, hey, you know what, we tried all of these things, it's not going to work. We have system restore for you where we can take some parts, it's again localized, right, not the entire system, but some of these critical parts back in time. So this is again a choice where we have to present to the user because it's not very clear if the user is willing to pay this price or not. So that's the challenge really. Mm-hmm. So, and this is not something new, as you rightly pointed out. We have been thinking about this for a while from Vista to Win 7, and there are certain low-hanging fruits that we could clearly get rid of and do automatic diagnosis.
Sure. But it's challenging. So let's back into reality a little bit. What do some of the most common, what's the sort of the morphology of systems that typically will fail? So is it data corruption? I know if you're playing around with NTDLL, if that gets corrupted, I mean, any system DLL gets corrupted, you're in trouble.
Right.
But what are some of the other things you guys see? I mean, we have data. You understand this.
Yes. So there is the chance of bootclicker files or S files being corrupted. That is less common these days because both Vista and Windows 7 have pretty good auto repair that you can't just go in and mug with them. I think sort of for us the most common scenario we've seen is drivers, especially third-party drivers. If the user gets a newer version of the driver, a video driver, a network driver, and installs them, if that newer version has any bug, and there might be a bug which is localized to certain hardware, then the machine will boot, fail to boot. And it might only happen during the next reboot because there's some boot ordering problem that a driver tries to do certain things during boot initialization which only fails then. Mm. So you can actually install new software, driver software, which works just fine. And then 2 days later you reboot and then you crash, you bug check. And that's sort of the most common one. There are all kinds of, and the rest of the root cause is probably very much spread out. It can be registry corruption. Certain parts of the registry are actually boot critical because there's information about driver configuration. And if that gets corrupted, either by somebody scribbling over the registry during normal operation or because you have a bad block on the disk, meaning a hardware bad block, then those things can also fail during boot. Other scenarios we have seen is when you get a Windows update and for some reason that was not fully installed. Now your system is in an inconsistent state. You have some new files, you have some old files. Mm-hmm. When you boot the next time, that inconsistency causes a crash.
Mm-hmm.
The master boot.
Yes, and then we have all kinds of on-disk data corruption. So the file system and the disk have certain critical data structures on the disk, and they get read during boot. If any of those data structures are corrupt, and then again could be because of a bad block on the disk, a physical bad block, mm-hmm. and when the system tries to read those data structures and they are missing, corrupt, unreadable, then the system will also not be able to boot. And then we can fall back in either trying to rewrite those data structures or using the backup copy of them.
Now in the case, in the case you just mentioned, the latter case with the actual physical problems on the disk,
mm-hmm.
I mean, how do you, clearly you guys can't resolve that, but you can tell the user, hey, you have a hard drive problem. Because you're not going to just keep on booting over and over again and never being able to fix the problem, right?
Correct. We actually also have another scenario, bad memory. So if you RAM one of the chipsets which hold the physical memory spent, we can also tell the user that, hey, it looks like you have bad memory. Reboot your system, we have a special memory checker which goes in and physically tests the memory. Mm-hmm. And then we can tell you, hey, you have bad memory. Again, nothing that normally the average user can fix, but at least you can bring it back to the place where you bought the computer, return it, and get a new memory checker.
Excellent. Very, very cool.
But there are some interesting cases, right, where even on-disk corruptions can still be fixed. So one of the things that happened on my home machine actually in Windows 7 was my home machine failed to boot because there was a service, the event log service, that could not load one of the event logs, right? And because all the event log was corrupted, because I was working on a machine that was really old, the hard drive was like 6 years old, and I had already been seeing hard drive failures on these machines. So the event log service could not, you know, boot, and then subsequent the whole thing, the boot failed, and we basically booted into Windows recovery environment. Mm-hmm. Now here, I chose, because I know what I was doing, I chose to actually use System Restore to go back. And System Restore replaces some of these files. And so now when you replace these files go to a different place in the hard drive. Mm-hmm. And so the machine is now able to come back, and it's been like almost 8 weeks now, and I've been doing okay. So now I had the chance to actually go copy some of this data onto my USB hard drive, and I have the chance to go and replace the drive. Mm. So even for certain kinds of hardware-based corruptions, sometimes it's not all the time, but some of the, like the specific example I gave you, it is possible to recopy some of this thing to a different block on the disk, boot your machine back, just to give you enough breathing space so that you could, I don't know, go replace a hard drive or just take backup of the stuff that you've not taken a backup since the last time, right? Just give you breathing space to go and buy a new hard drive if needed.
And our file system is actually smart that way. So let's say your disk develops a bad block and you can't read the data anymore. If you rewrite the data, the file system actually will figure out I can't write it to this particular block. So it puts that block into a list of bad blocks and marks it as unusable and then copies the block somewhere else. So on rewrite, you actually get a good block. Now, our system actually listens to events from the hard disk. So if the hard disk tells the operating system, hey, I'm going to go bad, then we actually notify the user and tell them, you better take a backup now and replace your disk now.
Excellent. So, you know, what were some of the hardest engineering things you guys faced in this release for recoverability in Windows?
Interesting. So the key challenge for us really in terms of engineering per se, or in terms of the whole scenario, is how do we make, as Stefan was mentioning, in Windows Vista, it was basically not all of the machines were recoverable, right? So they did not have the Windows recovery environment, for example, unless you bought it from one of the bigger manufacturers. Mm. So the key challenge for us in terms of getting this technology to the users, to every one of the Windows users, was a key challenge for us in Windows 7, which is what we focused on a big chunk of our efforts on. So the idea was, we said, okay, anybody who is installing Windows 7, doesn't matter whether they buy a retail copy of it, or whether they upgrade the machine from Vista to Win 7, or they buy it from a small system builder, we want every one of those Windows 7 machines to be recoverable. So that was the key challenge that we really faced. And some of the things that come along with it, for example, in terms of how do you manage the extra space on the hard drive. Some users and some manufacturers are sensitive about the extra space, which is the 200 megabytes, 250 megabytes that we actually consume on the disk. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the cost that you pay for the automatic diagnosis and automatic recovery.
Certainly.
But the question is, how can we do this in a way so that we do not affect the performance of the first boot, for example? So when the machine is clean, the operating system is installed, the user goes through what we call as the out-of-box experience, the OB experience. One of the challenges that we had there was, okay, how could we actually provide this Windows recovery environment as a part of the operating system, at the same time not paying the cost, too much cost, during the first initial experience that the user sees, developers. So we had to actually make some modifications to our engineering process to place the Windows Recovery Environment related files in the right place so that we don't pay too much cost up front for the user. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the key challenges there. The other one is, the other challenges are in terms of actually being able to validate the integrity of the actual state. So Pawan can talk about some of that.
So during our testing in Vista, what we did was we run, in reliability team, we have this testing called long haul, where we run scenarios over a long period of time without rebooting the machine. So as part of the setup of it, what we did was we recovered the machine using Windows Recovery Environment by creating some corruptions, and then go back to a bootable state, and then start this whole long haul scenarios. That way we could say, okay, we ran this machine without rebooting for 14 days. It's still running fine. So that's how we validated that, okay, we are still in a good state after we have recovered the machine. The second is we are part of the Selfos because in Win7, Winari is part of the build. So people do go through Selfos type of scenarios where they recover the machine once. And then we did not see any bad complaints. So that was one of the ways we could validate that our scenarios work. But by far, long haul was our way of saying, okay, this machine is working fine, kind of after recovery.
There are a few other things that, you know, small things that we have to do which had a bigger impact on the customer. So one of the things that Desmond mentioned earlier was when you're actually trying to move your system back, for example, right? So let's say it's not really a boot failure per se, but it's just that the user decided a lot of things here and there are not working, so he wants to move the system back. Now, at that point in time, there are certain issues with respect to, for example, the Windows license key. Mm-hmm. Right, so how do you manage that to ensure that we can actually move the system back in the right way? So some of those things that we had to handle on the during the design and the engineering of the thing,
sure.
So that we could do it in a way that does not violate the licensing agreements, at the same time ensures that the user doesn't have the burden of going and finding the hard drive, or I mean finding the DVD and stuff like that. So there were some engineering challenges there that we had to meet in order to make this possible.
Absolutely. I mean, the idea is you bring us back into a comfortable state, which is not going to be having to enter my product key again.
For Windows, at least.
For Windows.
But they're...
Understood. Aha! Interesting. Okay, we don't have to go down that rabbit hole. I understand what you're saying. Which does bring up an interesting point, right? But I thought it's a snapshot of everything that's on your machine while it's working.
Yes.
So if I installed Office, for example, which... most everybody does who owns Windows, eventually going to buy Office. I put that product key in.
Yes.
So I'm assuming you take care of that. Very good.
Yeah.
Not that this is a huge deal, but I mean...
No, I'm just... Yeah, when I was mentioning about some of that, I was talking about some of the engineering challenges that we had to face to take care of some of these cases that might occur. It's not that if you roll back... So if things are working fine and everything was all validated and stuff, and you move back to that state, you're still going to be okay.
Excellent.
So
now, how is this related to? Remember, we had a really excellent Vista. You know, the Vista time frame had a lot of cool names. Although I think at that point it was a code name called Time Warp. Remember Time Warp, Shadow Copy?
Oh,
all
shadow
of your
copy.
Files
yes, yes,
being saved,
yes,
and you wouldn't
yes.
even realize it, and then
yes,
you go back,
yes,
go, yeah,
yes,
take me back.
Yes.
So
yes. Okay. What this is, shadow copy, we also sometimes call this volume snapshots.
Okay.
This is a technology which is integrated with the file system, where you can take a snapshot of the file system. So you say, at this point, I basically want to copy of my file system at this point. Going forward, all the changes will happen, but I can always say, take me back to this time spot.
Yeah.
What actually happens on the copy, it makes copies of all the change blocks on the disk. It's a copy and write technology.
Mm.
And so on the disk, actually these things get taken automatically, I think in Windows 7 once a week. You take okay. It's taken by the system. Every time you do an installation via Windows Update, it also takes a volume snapshot.
Creating a restore point.
A restore point.
You
yes.
see that when you're
yes.
when you're
yes.
watching, pay attention
yes.
to Windows Update.
So, and this technology, this underlying technology, is used for a bunch of different things.
Mm.
First off, what we call system restore. So this is taking this, the whole system back in time.
Mm-hmm.
So it moves all your binaries back to a certain spot. It does not move back data.
Okay.
This is, so a system restore is a technology built on top of volume snapshots. You can also use volume snapshots if you go to Explorer, click on a directory or file, and then right-click on this directory or file, choose properties, and choose previous versions.
Mm.
It shows you all the previous version of that file or directory. We make use of system restore during a boot repair. Let's say you installed a partial update or partial driver installed and things are in a corrupt state.
Mm-hmm.
Then we try to repair this and we realize a bad driver was installed. We use system restore to get you back to a good state.
Excellent. Now, one question I have to ask, because you mentioned that, and I'm going to ask the PM, because PMs should get the weird questions.
All right.
Just joking. It's not a weird question. I mean, if you can't, I mean, it's clearly stated that you can't really tell when the system really isn't malfunctioning. Then how is it that you can tell that the system is functioning correctly? So when you take these snapshots once a week, you just have to say, okay, I'm going to assume, based on what I've seen in the event log, based on the fact that there haven't been any major exceptions or whatever, take us through what it means for you to realize the system is in a good state.
So today, when snapshots are taken, we actually don't really know whether the system is in a good state or not. However, in general, we take enough of them that if things do go bad, we have the ability to identify when the system was in a good state, or best effort at least, and try to take the system back to that point.
Okay, fair enough.
And actually, since we're talking about snapshots earlier, a couple other technologies that are also built on the snapshot technologies were the inbox full system image backup for those who are using Vista. It used to be called Complete PC. And the inbox file backup technology, as well as the technology to roll back specific files into a previous version. These are all built on top of the volume snapshot architecture. In fact, the volume snapshot architecture is open to third-party developers, so some of the third-party backup applications do build on top of the volume snapshot interface.
Cool.
But the key thing, as Stefan and Desmond were mentioning, the key thing to realize is in Windows 7, if you look at the whole recovery technology,
mm-hmm.
so it addresses four classes of problems, right? One is, okay, how can you recover individual files? So you have previous versions of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you just want one file, for example, you have previous versions to do it. Okay, actually, no, I'm not interested in one file. I'm actually interested in all of my data files alone. So now we have the user data backup technology to do that. So this is slightly higher granularity, right? Slightly bigger move of the data than just replacing one file. Then the user says, well, actually, you know, not just the data, but I want system binaries and stuff to be going back in time. So now we have the system restore, which helps you move system binaries, but not applications that the user might have installed.
Mm.
And then you say, okay, you know what, I actually want to move the entire system, including applications and stuff, back to where I was. And then you have the whole complete PC image and Windows recovery environment and stuff like that, helping you do that. So if you look at the scheme of progression of technologies that we have for the user to be able to place or recover from a single file, move a single file back in time, to moving an entire system back in time with, you know, moving partial data. So we have a lot of things built in place. But in terms of key investments and in terms of the key things, the key focus for what we want to be able to do is basically automatic recovery.
Yes.
Because as you can see, a lot of people who use Microsoft, for example, Windows, for example, would really benefit from an automatic diagnosis and recovery.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, my dad, for example, would not really know what to do when a machine doesn't boot. So being able to configure the Windows recovery environment so that it targets somebody like my father who does not really know what to do and helps him actually get the machine back in state so that he can do something useful with it is clearly important. So the direction in which we are basically we would like to move is automatic recovery and automatic diagnosis so that we could help the common user be able to fix these problems on their own without having to, you know, call support, for example. So this is the direction that we would really like to move, which is automatic recovery of systems at various granularities, as I mentioned.
Excellent. Right. And I think in some sense, I mean, in reality, it's going to have to require the continued evolution of the system. So Mark Pasunovich upstairs got a lot of work to do, and his fellow people around him in kernel world. Because in some sense, Windows is still a big playground. Everybody can play in it, and some people can be bullied and ruin it for everyone else. So there's still not the notion of true software isolated processing. And that's like in the world of singularity and the stuff that probably can never really be general purpose in it. But still, it's going to be a very nice thing, and you guys are going to push the envelope forward. So let me ask you that: how does the relationship work between like you guys and then just the general kind of kernel dudes and OS people?
Oh, we have a very close relationship. For something like repairing boot failures, you need to understand every single step of the boot process.
Yeah.
And so you go to lots of different teams asking, okay, what are your common failure scenarios? What do you expect to fail here, and how would you repair it? So we've gotten different APIs, different features from lots of different teams, especially the kernel team, and how to repair certain particular failures. And without those teams, we would not be able to do much because we can't do. we are not the domain expert in every single boot area.
Certainly.
Yeah.
So, and this actually also poses some challenges for us at each release. As the boot process gets more advanced and new technologies get introduced, for example, in Vista, the BitLocker feature came in, and it allowed people to, or allowed the boot process to validate itself at every step. Mm. So, when that happens, and let's say the boot fails, when we get into the Windows recovery environment, that poses an additional layer of challenge for us to analyze the boot process.
Absolutely.
And pinpoint the exact problem and be able to issue any repair.
Especially when the volume is encrypted.
Exactly.
Wow. Interesting. Maybe we don't have to jump down that rabbit hole.
And then testing those.
And then testing that. That must be fun.
Our test matrix is so huge, really.
Sure.
Just think of this, right? We have EFI BIOS. We have three architectures, x86, AMD64, IS64.
Mm-hmm.
We have server client queues and multiple of them. And languages.
Yes.
And various technologies like BitLocker or specific tests for backup and all the FPs. Windows resource protection.
It's amazing, man.
Yeah, so how do we, the challenge is how do we do all this in an optimized way and be able to cover first all our functional tests? At least are we functionally doing right things? Mm-hmm. The second is the question you asked. How do we know that the system is still okay after?
Yes.
Right. Because we depend on end-to-end testing, we have UI automation to click through, not use some test hook to do things, but we do UI automation to click through things and then go through an end-to-end scenario. So many of our tests actually make sure that we come back up, and we did the right thing to come back up, bring the machine back up. So, and of course, because of this limited environment we run in, it poses a big challenge to from testing perspective, because most of the tools that we think will run on the main OS may not run in this environment. So we probably have to develop some of these. And then just think of the various ways the disk can be partitioned.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like some people have system and with Windows 7, system and OS partition are separate. But back in Vista, they were the same, and you could OEMs could have made different types of partitions. And just looking at OEM images, there can be so many multiple, there could be multiple ways in which they can configure the machines.
Certainly.
It's a huge matrix of things.
The other key thing that that you were asking earlier, which is about data analysis, right? So one of the interesting challenges that we had in Vista, and we sort of tried our best, we tried to fix that in Win7, is how do we actually get data from machines that we can fix? Right, which is a key challenge.
Certainly.
So this is one of the things that we tried to address in Win7, because this is something that we really want, because these are machines that, these are the kinds of things that we would like to focus on for any other product development efforts that we do in the future. So the key idea here is, okay, so I've tried all of my diagnosis stuff, you know, machine, I think this is what I needed to fix. I tried that, it didn't work. So I tried something else that I also found was to be a problem for which I had a fix, that didn't work. So now the machine is in an unbootable state, and we still don't need data. Right, so this is something that we actually did in Windows 7 so that we can understand what are the types of failures that we see on the machines that we are unable to fix. So in Windows 7, for example, if in the case that there is a boot failure, and in the case that the boot failure is not fixed by Windows Recovery Environment, we actually collect certain critical data that we need to be able to analyze this. This is, again, data that is that does not have any privacy information in it. And then we ask the user, hey, can we send this data up to the Microsoft Watson database so that we could analyze these data and figure out what are the machines that are failing? How are these machines failing? And why are we not able to fix it? So this is one of the investments that we did make in Windows 7 so that we can understand the problem holistically. That is, both the machines that we could fix and what the problems were, which is what Stefan was mentioning to you about the drivers being some of the major problems that we are seeing in terms of non-bootable systems. And also non-bootable systems that we have Windows Recovery Environment is not able to fix, so that we could actually improve this going forward. But the key idea, again, is to provide a safety net for the user, because things are going to happen. Right? There are going to be things that are not going to work because of various... Because it's just simply because Windows allows people to configure the system in endless ways. Mm-hmm. Right? So, and because of the multitude of configurations and dimensions that the users can actually do with their whole system, we know that things will happen. So the idea is basically we need to provide recovery. We need to provide a safety net for the user so that when these things happen, we actually protect the user from this and mitigate the loss if we can, right? And the second is doing this automatically. So those are the two key things. And so to provide the safety net, you know, we had to work with the kernel team, we worked with the Windows build team, we worked with the backup team, we worked with, because the backup technologies are key, and then we worked with lots of individual tool teams like the Windows Resource Protection and other kinds of technologies that we use to do very localized diagnosis and localized repair. So in terms of the dependency itself, as you can imagine, we have a very, very wide dependency.
Absolutely.
But it is key to be able. The key is, again, providing the safety net for the user, knowing that these things will eventually happen. Even though there are efforts to reduce bugs in our own code as well as in bugs in third-party code, but just the myriad configurations that the user can play with in terms of what Windows allows is so huge that the safety net and the automatic recovery is important. So this is essentially the direction and the kind of thinking that we have been doing in Windows 7 and has been advancing in Windows, in Vista and then in Windows 7. Basically.
Certainly. So excellent. I'm glad you didn't say the other thing. We're not allowed to say the next Windows, but it's fine because, you know, this is how the world works.
I actually really meant Windows Vista and Windows 7.
Understood. So, excellent, man. It's again, great work. You gave me an idea for a new Windows SKU, man. What about a SKU where you can't make hardly any changes to anything, right? Wouldn't that be nice?
Except
we could call it Windows. What would we call
don't
it?
Touch
Windows it. Behind bars.
That's me not right.
Life with lots of walls. Maybe I could have some fun with the marketing there. I mean, they do probably a better job than they did. Hey, thank you so much for your time, you guys.
Thank you, Charles.
And this is great work. So Windows 7 is definitely, I have to say, man, it's the best operating system we've ever released.
We are really proud of it.
You guys are very proud of this, right?
Yeah.
You should be, man.
Yeah.
Very nice job, and thank you.
Thank you, Charles.
We'll come back and talk to you again. Great to see you.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Nice to meet you, Desmond. Take care.